Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans.
Good morning. Here we are once again on Democratic Perspectives. Mike Cosentino here.
And Gary LeMaster.
Yeah, Steve Williamson is out playing in California somewhere. We have something a little different this morning, although it is still stimulating, as the promo says. We got Mikey Weinstein. Good morning, sir.
How are you?
Very well, very well. We're going to talk a little bit about Mikey is the founder and president of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. He's also author of With God on Our Side, One Man's War Against an Evangelical Coup in America's Military, and No Snowflake in Our Avalanche, both of which describe the fight against the alleged coercive Christian fundamentalist practices by some members of the military. Obviously, it's been a careful going here, it has certainly made the news, and there's been a few things. Tell us a little bit about the Military Religious Freedom Foundation and your struggle.
Well, sure. We're a very militant and aggressive civil rights organization. Our militancy and aggression is in support of the U.S. Constitution's separation of church and state, or metaphysical and physical, you know, spiritual and temporal, as embodied in the First Amendment, as well as Clause 3, Article 6 of the body of the Constitution, which makes it clear there can never be a, quote, religious test for any position in the federal government. We represent just under 31,000 active duty United States sailors, soldiers, airmen, cadets, and midshipmen at the three federal military academies, West Point, the Air Force Academy, which is my alma mater and the alma mater of a lot of my kids, Annapolis, which is my dad's alma mater. This includes reservists, National Guard, Coast Guard, as well as veterans. About 96% of our clients are practicing Roman Catholics or Protestants, being told that they're, you know, not Christian enough.
Wow.
So we've been around, we're in our eighth year right now. We have a fairly good size advisory board, including people like Mike Farrell from the TV show MASH, Dick Lamb, right next door to you, the former three-term governor in Colorado, Dick Schlossberg, the former CEO and chairman, publisher of the Los Angeles Times and the Denver Post, retired generals. We had a former Navy SEAL, Glenn Doherty, my very dear friend, who unfortunately was killed in the attack on Benghazi. But you can go to anyone that's listening, can easiest thing is to do is just go right to our website, which is MilitaryReligiousFreedom.org, and you'll see everything you need to see there.
Yes, I was at the website. It's quite a good one, and just like us here, for that matter, that you've attracted a bunch of people to this kind of endeavor. It certainly got our attention, and glad to see it. And you know, keep up the good work and all that. And I'll fill out the forms on the website myself. You're a registered Republican, and you spent 3 years in the West Wing of the Reagan White House. Is that true?
That is true. You know, I tell people that I would be more of a, speaking of Arizona, right, a Barry Goldwater or a Jacob Javits type of Republican, but today's Republican Party, I think, would not be even recognizable to former flag carriers of the GOP, like we can go back to Abraham Lincoln, certainly, you know, Barry Goldwater, same thing with Jacob Javits. We've often felt that Democrats aren't a whole lot better. You know, my view is that under Republicans, man exploits man, but under Democrats, it's just the opposite. So, you know, we've kind of given up on both political parties because of this. But, you know, our mantra is a very simple one, you know, to anyone that's out there, which is, you know, respect existence or expect resistance. And we provide, you know, to our members of the military that come to us, AARP, and not the one you're thinking about, because most of them are not old enough to be, you know, we provide its anonymity, action, results, and protection. So we have 5 Nobel Peace Prize nominations. They're very hard to get. It's given out in Oslo in October of each year. So last October, there were only 43 organizations worldwide that were nominated. We were one of those, and then a week later, we got nominated again, this time by a prior winner of the Nobel Peace Prize, like we were last year. So we don't say that that's not narcissism, it's just necessity, so that people realize that we are real, we matter. I was recently selected by Defense News, which is the same publisher as that of the Arizona Republic, USA Today, many others, as one of the top 100 most influential people for U.S. defense. Again, not narcissism, but necessity, so that people realize that we mean business, and that's it.
No, that's important. I mean, all those things are important to note, that those 5 nominations for the Nobel Peace Prize is a big deal.
That's impressive. Mikey, this is Gary. Let me ask you, what was the genesis of your organization? What event or events caused you to head in this direction?
Well, that's a good question, Gary. I've written 2 books about this. The first one, as you mentioned, With God on Our Side. The second one, it just came out about a little bit less than a year ago, called No Snowflake in an Avalanche. And it's from the quote from Voltaire, right? Everything sounds better in French. No snowflake in an avalanche ever feels responsible. Anyone who's out there who's a parent, a step-parent, foster parent, even in low, just someone who cares about a younger person, can understand that when your children are hurt, your life is now forfeit. You will do whatever you need to do to fight back. And in 2004, I found out that my 2 sons, Jewish sons, and my future daughter-in-law at the Air Force Academy, were undergoing religious persecution. In the case of my daughter-in-law, again, happens to be Christian. My 2 sons are Jewish, as I mentioned. They were being called effing Jews and being accused of being totally complicit in the execution of Jesus Christ by numerous cadets and officers there in 2004. I have to, tip my hat to my good friend Mel Gibson when he came out with that wonderful movie in February of 2004, the name of which I forget, but I always refer to it as the Jesus Chainsaw Massacre or Freddy versus Jesus. Obviously, it's the Passion of the Christ, and we saw the true colors of my alma mater at that point. So when I saw my own children being tormented, I could never have possibly... or my wife and I could never have foreseen that, we would become civil rights fighters, mostly for Protestants or Roman Catholics, being persecuted by essentially an unbridled, boundless, fundamentalist Christian Taliban running around in the technologically most lethal organization ever created by humankind, which is our United States military.
Wow, that label Christian Taliban is an effective one, and we've seen other examples of that in American life, and it always shocks me when they can't see it, when they can't see that having a national religion is not a good idea, and so on. But now you call this a national security threat, sir. A dire national security threat, the destruction of the wall separating church and state and the U.S. armed forces. Could you explain that, sir?
Yes, we used to, it's not a problem issue or a challenge. I can say it in one sentence. What we're dealing with is a fanatical religiosity, and not Wahhabist or Salafi, fundamentalist Islam, but what's known as fundamentalist or dominion Christianity. If you Google dominion Christianity, you will see. So we're talking about a fanatical religiosity married up to mixed in with actual weapons of mass destruction, nuclear, chemical, biological, even conventional laser-guided. We have the weapons of mass destruction. The other side, does not yet. Further mixed in with a tortured, poisonous version of so-called patriotism, further mixed in with completely unfettered access to the weapon systems due to the vertically encrusted draconian structure, specter of military command influence, further mixed in with a total dearth of any restraint, oversight, or supervision. And what you have is a metastasizing national security threat that is so enormous that it's almost impossible to believe that it exists unless you are complicit. And that's what we do.
It is impossible to believe, and you're great for this organization, just such a help for bringing this out. Now, you went to the United States Air Force Academy. Tell us a little bit about what it was like. You know, most of us, I was a high school teacher for many years, and as you said, I was one of those people that saw people that I cared about go off to the military academies. And with great pride, you know, especially from small town Arizona, anybody that got an academy appointment was a big deal. Some of them made it, some of them didn't, for all the other reasons, but none didn't make it for this reason that I know of. So I guess I'm trying to get you to talk about the difference between your experience and what you obviously found your son's experience became.
Well, this kind of begs a different question, Mike and Gary, which is, you know, when did this start?
Sure.
I often find that, you know, this is not your dad's, you know, these are not your dad's or mom's military academies. We traced this current national security threat disaster to 1972, because that was the end of the draft, mandatory conscription. I mean, prior to 1972, we were pulling people into the military involuntarily. Now, by the way, we still have a poverty draft in this country. You know, rich people, their kids don't go into the military. Members of Congress, most, by far and away, their kids do not go into the military.
Absolutely. I think the last survey said there was one that had a...
Oh, it's unbelievable. That, you know, so again, we still have a poverty draft. But when we had a draft, we were pulling people involuntarily into the military with some degree of, you know, equanimity from what we now refer to as both, you know, blue and red states. When that ended, we saw this morphing because of the distaste for the Vietnam War. There was a real void, and people did not want to go into the military from what we now refer to really mostly as blue states. So we saw this morphing into this so-called super patriotism becoming an alloy with fundamentalist Christianity, which mostly exists in red states. So the people that were so-called volunteering coming in, it began to grow and grow and grow. There were also changes that occurred in the chaplaincy. It used to be that the chaplaincy had to reflect the number of people in the military. During my time in the White House, Reagan abandoned those gates, and those particular boundaries were taken away. And it grew and it grew. And I was at the Air Force Academy from 1973 to 1977. I graduated in 77. And I think it was Kierkegaard who says that you live your life forward, but you understand it backwards. And I look back now, and I could see things that were happening that I didn't perceive at the time. This didn't exist, not nearly, you know, as ubiquitously as it does now. But I look back, and I can say now I understand a little better, as looking backwards in my life. But it grew and grew and grew, and then it really exploded in 1994. With the advent of the so-called Gingrich Revolution, right, the second year of the end of the second year, with the congressional elections of the first Clinton presidency, when we had the so-called contract with America, and America, in the eyes of the GOP, became very digitized. It was a one and a zero. Either you believed in this thing, no choice for women, everybody should have guns. I can go right down the line. There should be a national religious faith, and it's this virulent form of Christianity. Then you get to be an American. If you didn't, it was a zero. 7 years later, we had 9/11, and it went on steroids. So it grew and it grew and it grew. As I said before, I've chronicled it in the two books. Anyone who's listening, it's very easy to go to Amazon or go to a bookstore, or go to our website and buy No Snowflake and an Avalanche. It explains it, or just go to our website and you'll see audio. You'll see video, and you'll see text that is incontrovertible, and you'll understand that when you look back in human history, Gary, and when you look back, Mike, whenever you've seen a virulent form of any religious faith, particularly Christianity, merging itself with the state, I mean, that was the Roman Empire, right?
Right.
We don't end up, and I don't just mean, as I said, the Holocaust or the Crusades or the pogroms, but whenever this has happened, we don't end up with little creeks, rivers, streams, or ponds or lakes. We end up with oceans and oceans of blood.
Right.
And, Frederick Douglass, the great abolitionist, got it right when he said that power concedes nothing without a demand. It never has and it never will. So the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, our main job is to be the demanders of the commanders.
I have that on the wall of my college classroom. Tell us about Blake Page, if you don't mind. There's two things I'd like to get in before we run out of time. We have Blake Page, Cadet Blake Page, and somebody named Charles Clymer has, I'm not sure I got his last name right, but those two individuals figure into your narrative here.
I don't know that I recognize the latter name. I mean,
no.
Blake, I certainly recognize, and Blake is still our director of Military Religious Freedom Foundation Affairs at West Point, a true American hero. Blake decided that he did the unthinkable. I mean, 6 months away from graduating as a second lieutenant, well, he wouldn't be, he was not going to be commissioning, but still graduating with his degree and his ring from West Point.
Oh, absolutely.
He decided to forfeit that to make a statement that the tidal wave of unconstitutional proselytizing going on at this venerable military academy was wrong.
I believe so he said that they were disloyal to their oath. That they,
well, yes. I mean, remember, everybody in the military, as you know, Mike, having been in,
yes,
swears an oath not to a particular version of the Quran, the Torah, Richard Dawson's book, The God Delusion, or the Bible, but to the U.S. Constitution. Our country allows freedom of religion and hopes that everybody gloriously and comprehensively celebrates whatever religious faith or no faith that they have. But you cannot engage the machinery of the state to gain an insuperable advantage in pushing your religious faith. The problem is, the Great Commission of Christianity, Mark 16:15 or Matthew 28:19, one of the last things Jesus is supposed to have said to his disciples, go and make disciples of all nations. That comes into direct conflict in certain situations. If you're walking through a mall in Scottsdale, or you're at an Arizona Diamondbacks baseball game, and you sit next to somebody, you know what, and they want to proselytize you, they can. That's America, man. That's the way it goes. But if that person is your boss, even your shift manager at Starbucks, that cannot happen. And it really can't happen in the U.S. military, where many of your constitutional rights are severely abridged in order to create an atmosphere where we enhance as much as we can good order and discipline to create the necessary lethality for our military to protect the full panoply of constitutional rights for the rest of us. So Blake made a statement. I tried to talk him out of it, and then I suddenly, we all live our lives without a soundtrack. You can go to a Hollywood movie, as we all do, and you'll hear the trumpets, the drums, and the chorus, and it tells you when something big is happening.
Right.
But in life, we don't have that. Our soundtrack's got to be inside of us. And I suddenly realized that this was one of those soundtrack moments, like that young man standing in Tiananmen Square, standing in front of the gun turret of the tanks of the PRC,
yeah.
Rosa Parks, and I realized that what Blake was doing was gallant and valiant and incredibly courageous. So we supported him. We helped him place an op-ed with the Huffington Post, and for 11 and a half days until the horrible tragedy happened at Sandy Hook, we were the number one news story pretty much in the world. And, we have 151 clients now at West Point. 136 of them are Protestant and Roman Catholic. And Blake is in the process of getting a book ready. He'll have a book coming out. And incredibly courageous young man. To forego the ring, which he already had, and to forego the diploma, which was going to be his, is an incredible act of sacrifice. But he did it for the better, for the U.S. Constitution, and to make a point. The same way monks light themselves on fire to make a point, the same way anyone tries to make a point.
Absolutely.
It is, with a tremendous degree of valor.
To be so close, and knowing you and I and many others know what it takes to get that, all of that, to be so close and to sacrifice that for this, what is a greater good, at least he sees it.
Right.
I think everyone can kind of understand the civil rights implications of what you're doing. The persecution. What can you talk a little bit about the danger to the country at large and as regards to our foreign policy and military policies? You mentioned the American Taliban.
I mean, one of the things you're not supposed to talk about in this country is we're not supposed to talk about why did 9/11 happen. Nobody likes Bin Laden. Nobody likes the Taliban or Al Qaeda. I mean, nobody does. But we have to ask ourselves what the consequences are of our national policy, and what is this country, what are we really about? I didn't really understand history until I started reading Howard Zinn. I had the honor of being able to replace him, although no one can do that, when he passed away, on the advisory board of truthout.org, a great independent news source. And, of course, Howard wrote the book, A People's History of the United States, and his consensus, his thesis, is that we are a class society. We don't like to think that we are, because we have this Horatio Alger complex, right? But we are. And the question is, to the rest of the world, if you look at the things we've done, manipulation, colonialism, supremacy, arrogance, there was that movie that came out, I'm sure you guys remember, I don't know how old you are, but the Ugly American.
Yes. We're that old.
Okay, good.
Definitely.
So the consequence of merging our national interests into an international interest to spread Christianity is terrifying. This country was founded, in its most prominent feature, one of its most foundational structures is separating religion from government. Religion can flourish. I mean, de Tocqueville talked about that when he came to this country 50 years after it started, and remarked about the incredible number of religions and how religious Americans were. We went to we've been through two or three great awakenings, but if you look at countries where that doesn't exist, Israel has no constitution, but they don't separate synagogue and state there. Saudi Arabia and many Arabic countries do not separate mosque and state. You can go to North Korea where there's no mention of the concept of atheism permeates everything. But we do it differently in this country. And when people begin to view United States of America as the United States of Jesus Christ, that's terrifying. And there's nothing. I mean, at the Air Force Academy, we have 372 clients. Only one is out, and he's a conservative Republican evangelical born again Christian. Evangelicals are our friends. They're on our advisory board. They donate to us. They're our clients because even they won't go the next step. The difference is, every fundamentalist is an evangelical by definition, but not vice versa. The evangelicals and fundamentalists or dominionists both want to convert Gary, Mike, and Mikey to be Christians just like them. The difference is evangelicals say, look, I have to comport my zeal to do this in accordance with the time, place, and manner restrictions put forth by our U.S. Constitution. Fundamentalists say, to hell with that. There is right. no time, there is no place or manner in which I can proselytize you, and that is un-American and it's unlawful.
Some of us believe that they'll even willing to bring down the government in the United States in order to further their, or at least damage the economy so that the government does its bidding. Howard Zinn's last book, at least the last book that came into my possession, was a Power No Government Can Suppress. And, of course, he was talking about the power of exactly what you're doing, organized people.
Yes. There's a book out now called Howard Zinn Speaks, which has a number of his wonderful speeches in it, and it talks about, even going back to the founding, this country, I mean, what had terrified the 55 founders was Shays' Rebellion, in western Massachusetts, where you had people that were not going to put up with the incredible taxation. These were, this country, the 55 founders are mostly, wealthy white guys that had a lot of property. We're not denigrating the history of this country, but it is what it is. When you look at it through the eyes of Native Americans, and let's face it, I'm from New Mexico, you're in Arizona, there's a very large Native American population. You look at it through the eyes of people in unions, or people of color, or women, it's a very different perspective.
I think that's happening now. I really do. I think maybe we turned a corner with Obama's reelection, that all of that part of America, the raft of white guys aren't going to run everything anymore, that there is at least an acknowledgement of how much the rest of us contribute. Getting back to the Founding Fathers, it's just it drives me crazy every time I hear them use that as a justification, them meaning the fundamentalists, as justification for a Christian nation. They were after Jefferson his whole life for him to declare where he was and he avoided it to just a couple of years before his death, and his answer was the Jefferson Bible. I have the Jefferson Bible at home. That's a topic for another show, but suffice it to say, the Jefferson Bible was he took a razor to the Bible and cut out a lot of the most beautiful teaching that Jesus said. And that could be attributed and left out everything else.
See, the biggest problem with any of this is when fundamentals, and it's easy to cherry pick the New Testament, but it does say what it says. The problem is that Jesus doesn't give anyone a choice. I mean, it's me, or you're going to burn eternally in the fires of hell. Sorry, I tried to help you. And this is the problem. And, of course, we hear it all the time from a very devout Christian saying, look, I'm doing this to you to save you, which takes my mind back to the Vietnam War. In order to save the village, we had to destroy it.
Right. Yes, exactly. One of our favorite topics here is the differences in the Republican Party, certainly. And we touched on that at the beginning of the show. Now, you as a member of the Reagan White House, and of course Reagan has been canonized by the Republican Party beyond any truth that was existing.
I completely agree. I saw him every day for over 3 years, And I always viewed him as a hand puppet. I mean, I don't think anyone knew who he was. I mean, different people would go inside of him like a hand puppet, and he would say what he told them to say. I remember looking back, going, "Oh my God, this is the president," and I understand now why he was a B actor. The concept of St. Ronald Reagan is ridiculous. I mean, it's I was there. I managed the Iran-Contra investigation as the committee management officer when that thing blew up, and but as I said before, our biggest donors seem to be conservative Republicans that don't want anyone to know that they're donating to us. You know, liberals sit there and talk all the time about how we want to help, and then they don't do anything. So, you know, we don't look at someone through the prism of whether you're a Democrat or a Republican. As I told you, we've given up on both parties.
Yes.
We used to donate to certain members of the people running for office. I mean, individually, my wife and I did. We stopped doing that. That was completely useless. I saw something this morning indicating that members of Congress have a lower approval rating, listen to this now, gentlemen, than telemarketers.
Oh, then, but we got cockroaches.
Cockroaches and head lice and root canals.
But only one party is bat crap crazy, in my opinion. And that's, and we know which one that is. And the owner station was really glad I cleaned that up. But
I know what you're saying. And again, you know, we're a nonprofit, so we can't espouse one party over another.
Yeah, I can say stuff like that.
And I can tell you that I look at Obama in there, and although, as an individual, you know, supported him, I still look down there. You know, Guantanamo, Gitmo is still there.
Right.
There are still some there in many respects in the fight that we're involved with. There appears to be almost a seamless transition between George W. Bush and Barack Obama, and it sickens me. You know, this is there are certain things that are above politics. The disaster at Sandy Hook, which has been terribly politicized now. You know, and you live in Arizona, which was the last state to accept the Martin Luther King holiday until there was the threat of losing the Super Bowl in Phoenix, right?
Right.
You know, I always say that until a human being is prepared to divorce themselves from their love of money and fear of losing it, then you are not a true Homo sapien. You are not going to reach the point. No matter, you know, kicking $10 to the March of Dimes or buying some Girl Scout cookies doesn't make it okay. The number of people that told us they were afraid to try to help support us because they were, back in December, because they were afraid that sequestration would kick in and they were government contractors, you know, and it's an odious thing to see the power that money has. And and that's, you know, it goes right back to Zinn again. Remember, you know, I barely knew who Howard Zinn was until a few years ago. I was visiting family that was vacationing in Telluride, and I walked by a building, and on the side of the building, in giant black lettering, it said, "Dissent is the highest form of patriotism."
Yep.
And then I said, "Oh my God, that's beautiful. Who said that?" And then it opened a new world. But why wasn't I taught that in public school? Why wasn't I taught that at the Air Force Academy? Well, I know why. Because, you know, we are a class society, but if you're, and if, you know, if you're the right type of Christian,
well,
people we're fighting want to make those, you know, just like in India.
We're running out of time here. I'm sorry. But if you had, we used Power No Government Can Suppress in our AP classes at the high school I taught in.
Oh, that's, you know, I wish I'd had you as my teacher.
There you go. I'm sorry. We used the People's History of the United States, not the other one.
Oh,
listen, we got a couple minutes left. We want to make, now we're not doing this for money, but we are doing this to get our message out. This podcast is available on vvid.org, vvid.org, as all Democratic Perspectives shows are. And you have a website, a very nice, well-made professional website, called the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. Just Google that and you'll go there.
Yes, it's just militaryreligiousfreedom.org.
Okay, that's it. MilitaryReligiousFreedom.org, and that'll get you there. You can just type that, and that'll get you there, too. I want to say again about the 5 Nobel Prize nominations. We may be a bunch of small-town radicals here in Sedona, Arizona, but the Mikey Weinstein is the man we've been talking to, and his organization is obviously the real deal with international recognition and fighting the good fight. Mikey, we thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'm very grateful. Thank you, Mike and Gary. It's been a pleasure.
Okay. We'll talk again, maybe. And anyway, again, vvid.org.
We have more time to fill, I guess. So,
all right.
Anyway, check out Mikey's books. Check out the website. Check out our website. And we'll look forward to talking to you again.
You've been and listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.